this is Gilbert Gottfried. Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, your go-to podcast on old things mining.
Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, the podcast covering everything from engineering, mining, and mine waste management to whatever else may be on our minds. Pop in your headphones and don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share. And now, here is your host, Brian Ulrich.
Everyone, this is Brian. This is Behind the Scenes with Brian, and today I am joined by Greg Beischer. Greg, how are you today?
Very good, Brian. Thanks for inviting me on your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And let's just kind of skip to the chase here a little bit. What is your current position?
Right. Yeah, I run a company called Alaska Energy Metals Corporation that's focused primarily on a nickel project called Nickel Eye in Alaska, as you might imagine.
Okay. And let's back up a little bit and talk about your background and your education.
Sure. Yes. Well, I actually grew up in Toronto, Canada, and sort of by accident ended up going to a mining engineering school here in Ontario. I happen to be back in Toronto today, as it turns out, but Alaska is my home base. But went to school at the Haileybury School of Mines in Northern Ontario, and then Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario. And quite early on, I became a student geologist with the big nickel mining company called Inco, now has been absorbed into an even bigger Brazilian company called Vale. But at the time, Inco was the largest nickel producer in the world. And so I learned a fair bit about nickel geology and nickel mineralization, and moved around. They moved me around all over Canada. But then in 1995, moved me to Alaska to work on, actually, as it turns out, the exact same project that I'm now working on 27 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of come full circle. But I did 5 great years of work on the Nickel Eye project for Inco in the late 90s. And then the nickel price plummeted and they said, well, that's it. Close up your shop and move to Toronto. And I couldn't, because I just really love Alaska and was very happy there raising my family. So fortunately, we had received our permanent residence status just weeks before I was stumbling back to Canada. But we were able to stay, and we've made a fantastic life in Anchorage ever since.
Yeah. And your property is in, I guess, central or south central Alaska, south of Fairbanks.
That's right. Yeah, that's probably a 6-hour drive from my house in Anchorage, Alaska, or you can fly up to Fairbanks and just a couple hours down the highway from there. It's well positioned, you know, in terms of development logistics for considering how north we are. I mean, the development logistics are pretty good. Power is not too far away. Railway is not too far away. And there's a deep water port, of course, at Valdez, Alaska.
Yeah. So is nickel a common thing in Alaska? Because this is the first, I'm not a geologist, but this is the first one I've heard of.
Yeah, there's no nickel mines in Alaska right now. Though if there's ever going to be one, it's right in this particular area, because the right type of rocks occur there. You know, you mentioned you're not a geologist, but I know a bit about your background, and you know something about the rocks that can host nickel. And they're not very common around the world. They don't have a very good distribution across the earth. And in fact, in the United States, it's really only Alaska, Wyoming, Montana, Minnesota, and a little bit of Michigan that possibly could host nickel or is known to host nickel deposits, because it's just a very specific type of rock, what we call ultramafic rocks, in which nickel occurs. And those rocks just don't exist elsewhere in the United States. And so as a consequence, actually, there is only one little nickel mine in all of the United States on the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. And in fact, that nickel gets exported back to Canada. So it's like the United States is importing 100% of the nickel it consumes for all manner of things that nickel's used for, stainless steel being by far the biggest use for the metal. But there's quite a variety of uses for it. And now there's a big new use, of course, in electric vehicle batteries.
Yeah. Yeah, and so where besides Canada and in the future Alaska, where does the world supply of nickel come from?
Right, there's great supplies of nickel in Canada, though the mines are getting older. Some of them have been in production for over 100 years. Canada presently accounts for about 50% of the nickel that's imported into the United States. Though I don't know if that's really going to keep coming, because now I see Canada building huge battery plants in Quebec and Ontario. And I just wonder if Canada is not going to start consuming a lot more of its own nickel. And I think that should be a concern for the United States. But the rest of the nickel typically comes from Indonesia. That's the largest producer, and other equatorial countries where they have a type of nickel deposit called laterite nickel. It's different than the sulfide nickel that we mine here in North America. It's a sort of a surficial product caused by chemical weathering in a jungle equatorial environment. The unfortunate thing about it is it's not that friendly on the earth and has a huge carbon footprint. I mean, the mining companies, to get at the nickel, have to strip mine the jungle away, remove the surface. It's almost like a soil, not a rock. And then they replace everything, of course, reclaim the land, but they're often using coal to generate the power to smelt the nickel out of the laterite ore. You know, if the whole point of driving electric cars is to put less carbon in the atmosphere, then mining laterite nickel is not the way to do that.
Yeah, that's very understandable. So tell me about the discovery of your ore body. How was that discovered? Does it go back a long time, or is it a fairly recent discovery?
Yeah, I can't call it an ore body yet. I can't even actually call it a deposit, although I will be able to do soon because of the drilling work we've recently completed. But the reason that Inco, the big nickel miner, the reason they sent me to Alaska to begin with is that the global targeting team had noticed that there was lots of geologic similarities to the Norilsk area of Siberia in Russia. At that place, it is literally the largest accumulation of rich nickel sulfides on Earth, even bigger than the amazing deposits in Sudbury, Ontario, just north of here. In Toronto. So that was my job. And for 5 years, we worked on the project in the 90s. And we did clearly establish on a geologic basis that all those same magmatic processes were at work that could have created massive rich sulfide nickel deposits, but we didn't find it. But In our search, I did drill into hundreds of meters of weak mineralization, disseminated sulfide mineralization over very large volumes of rock. And at the time, there's just no way that would have been economic to extract. But now that there's going to be such a growing demand for copper, cobalt, nickel for batteries, then it may very well become economic to extract it. And the thing is, massive sulfides or rich high unit value deposits like Norilsk or like at Sudbury or Voisey's Bay and Labrador, these are very, very rare deposits and very difficult to find. I mean, sometimes it's decades between major discoveries, and all that low hanging fruit has been gone. It's been discovered and is being mined or has been mined. And so I think our mining industry is going to have to move on to the next generation of nickel deposits, these lower concentrations, bulk tonnage, major mining operations. I know since a bit about your background, you must have seen giant porphyry copper mines, big open pit operations. Yeah, and I think that's what the nickel, right. And I think that's what the nickel business now has to move to in order to meet the huge demand.
Yeah, if you can imagine, the Bingham Canyon mine in Utah has been mined for more than 100 years now, and it's the low-grade disseminated ore body. So so copper has a very long history of doing that. So yeah, maybe you're right that it's time for nickel to be involved. So you've got other... I don't want to have any forward-looking statements here, and you have to correct me, but you've got other mineralization in that deposit, I think. Yep. Vanadium might have been one of them.
No. There's nickel, and there's copper and cobalt, platinum and palladium, and even a little bit of gold to go along with. And that's a very common association of metals in the magmatic environment. Yeah, but those are really accessory metals. The main value driver in the mineralization is nickel. We say that the grade is 0.35% nickel equivalent. So that's the value of the nickel plus the value of the accessory metals added to it. But the concentration of nickel is roughly 0.25%. And the other accessory metals contribute another 0.1% for 0.35% total nickel equivalent.
Okay. And are you close to making a PEA report?
No, not close to a PEA. We this year did the first round of drilling. We knew from historical drill holes that there was nickel in this one layer of strata in the layered ultramafic intrusion that had nickel, disseminated nickel sulfide. And like every single hole that drilled through this strata had nickel sulfides in it, and over quite extensive widths. Imperial system, 900 to 1,000 foot intersections for several hundred meters. So quite significant thicknesses over a very long distance, quite a few miles, in fact. But the drilling was very sparse. And so for us to be able to say there's actually a deposit or a resource, it's necessary to drill diamond core holes on a grid style pattern. And so we did the first round of that drilling this summer, drilled 8 holes on a pattern 300 meters apart. And now we're receiving the assay results from our samples of those drill cores. And once we've got all the assays, we can calculate a tonnage of rock and the percentage or concentration of the metals in that rock. And at that point, we can say we've got a deposit of nickel and other metals, or a resource. We will call it an inferred resource in the terminology of the regulators of the stock exchange.
Yeah. Right now, it seems like a open pit operation. Is that?
Yeah, with a concentration of metal like this, it would be impossible to mine by underground methods and make money. And it's like I say, we haven't gone into the preliminary economic assessment stage yet, or the PEA stage yet. And it's not even clear at this point how much money we might make at current metal prices using an open pit mining method. So lots to be done there. Our first job is to prove that the nickel really is there on a grid style drilling pattern.
Yeah. Okay. What is a typical nickel processing plant? What does that all include?
Yeah, that much is standard, whether it's an underground or open pit mine. The ore is crushed, well, it's blasted from the earth. It's crushed down to gravel size, and then it's put in a great big rotating mills to grind it down until the particle size is sort of like around like baby powder, very, very fine grains, so that then we can use other processes to separate the valuable metal grains from the grains of minerals that have no value. And we do that through typically through a flotation process. The ground material suspended in an air bubble column with certain additives allows the valuable minerals to float to the surface and be scraped off and concentrated. And so the outcome of the milling process is a metal concentrate. Then typically is shipped somewhere else in the world to a smelter where heat is used to drive off the sulfur and leave behind the metals that we use in our lives. So that would be the typical processing. There's other ways to do it, though, where we might go through that milling process, but then through rather than use smelting, use a different process to end up with the nickel being created right at the mine site. And of course, that's going to save an awful lot of shipping cost. And, and in our case, it'll keep the metal right here in America, rather than sending it away to a smelter that might be in Japan or elsewhere in Asia.
So when you let's say create the bullion or whatever, what is the name for that? Because in gold it's called doré, if it's kind of a dog's breakfast of minerals. So what is it called in?
Yeah, in base metal mining, it's called mat. It would be a nickel mat or a copper mat, M-A-T-T-E. And that would be sort of the equivalent to gold doré, which is a partially refined gold. Mat is a partially refined base metal like nickel. So a mat needs further refining to make a pure nickel metal. I just happen to have like an ingot of nickel right here.
Oh, that's cool.
But to make absolutely pure nickel is it takes a lot of refining from the process, the smelting process.
Okay, very cool. So it's probably too early in your exploration to have even looked at like the social and environmental side. Is that?
Absolutely not. No, we're very tuned into that because, I know that we've got to get off on the right foot. There's people when they see that a mine could be developed might become concerned. It's in their backyard, and so I know that our exploration team is really the first ambassadors of our company in the local communities, and so we really try to get along with everybody, be respectful of their people, and even though in Alaska people have some pretty darn big backyards, there can be definitely skepticism about the mining business. So we've definitely thinking about all of these things. Some projects in Alaska have become quite controversial, and we don't want to get in that controversy. One of the hot button topics in Alaska always is salmon and salmon spawning areas in particular. And, to develop a big mining operation near salmon spawning areas in the rivers is controversial. Fortunately for us, as it happens, the rivers draining through and from the project don't really support any fish life. They're glacial rivers that have a very high suspended sediment load, and they're rushing rivers, and it's really not a friendly place for a fish. So there is no salmon, probably for 50 miles downstream from our project site. So going to make the permitting a lot easier.
Yeah, great. So can you see Denali from your project?
No, you couldn't see it.
On a clear day, I mean.
We're probably 120 miles or more to the east from Denali, directly east, more or less. Let's just say I haven't noticed it. It's possible because I can see Denali on a good day from my home in Anchorage, which is probably 75 or 80 miles from the mountain. Okay. But I don't, certainly that's not going to cause any development or permitting issue for us. The project area is a beautiful area, very picturesque. And so, like most of Alaska.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be in Fairbanks a couple of times working at the Fort Knox mine, and one of the weekend days that I had free, one of the drillers took me down to Denali, and it's just the gorgeous. The whole state is gorgeous.
It really is, and you were fortunate to visit Kinross's Fort Knox mine, and it really is a great example of a modern mining operation. They've just done a really great job, protective of the environment, and a great corporate citizen.
Yeah. So a silly question for you: the name of the project, Nikolai, where did that name come from?
There's a rock unit above the strata of interest called the Nikolai flood basalts. I don't know how they were named, but that name's been used for a long time in the general area. And so when Inco started the project back in the 90s, that's what we named it. Was the Nikolai Nickel Project.
Okay. You know what? I think I'm out of questions for you. Was there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't already chat about?
Well, I think Alaska is a great place in which to explore. There's untold wealth to be discovered there. I think the United States is in a very, very vulnerable position right now when it comes to metal supplies. The country has not encouraged mining, domestic mining. In fact, the government, the administration has often seemed to be opposed to mining developments. And as a consequence, a lot of American mining companies started to take their operations elsewhere. But in the meantime, though, I don't think the United States has prioritized metals highly enough and has abdicated a lot of the metal supply lines to China and other countries. And so China controls a lot of the metal flow around the world. And, you know, if it was ever, if those supply lines were ever weaponized, where, you know, all of a sudden supplies of metals are cut off to the United States, the country's going to be in a real world of hurt. And so I think it really has to work on domestic mining operations and work on encouraging mining operations in free trade countries to make sure the supplies of metals keep coming, especially since they're going to be so important as we transition away from fossil fuels, and or at least add to how we generate energy. But truly, I mean, energy is what makes societies successful. That's part of the reason the United States has become a world leader, is because of energy. And to keep our position now, I think we have to become much more open to mining domestically. And Alaska has such a wealth of metals, some discovered, much more to be discovered. I think we can supply a lot of the nation's metal needs.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I, the use of the term weaponized, even something like the rare earth elements that could easily be withheld from wherever in the world. And all these things that are needed for green energies are, you know, a huge part of our future. And nickel is one of those things. I know copper is big for the growth of the planet, but the green energy stuff is what we really need to focus on for the future.
Indeed. Yeah. I was being kind of surprised that you know, copper was only added last year to the critical minerals list, and it's absolutely critical to electrical power delivery. And I think maybe the reason it wasn't on the list was that a lot of copper is produced in Peru and Chile, countries that are friendly to us. But the reality is that many of the mines are owned by Chinese companies, and the product from those mines is not going to come to America. It's going to China.
Yeah, very true. Very good point. Very good point. Greg, I know you are a busy person running that project. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some information with us today. And I know you're at a conference as well, so I'll let you go, but I really appreciate it, and maybe we can catch up one of these days.
Oh, that'd be great, Brian. I appreciated your questions, good probing questions, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All the best, Greg.
Same to you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it. I'm Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. Until next time, keep on rockin'.